It's always a pleasure, especially when we have the opportunity to fellowship together. It's also always a pleasure when we know that we have brethren and sisters that we can count on. The pleasure is so deep when you come to begin to think that when all else fails, you have Christ to depend on. Thank you, Bush, for the songs you've chosen this evening. The song before this, if I had gone through that, I would have chosen that song too. That was a beautiful song. Our Redeemer is there waiting for us, and he takes care of us. Thank you all of you. Thank all of you for coming this evening, for keeping your busy schedule, coming to fellowship here. It's always a privilege to be grateful to God because he so blessed us with bountiful blessings that we do not and cannot quantify or enumerate. I'll ask you a question. How many of you are familiar with the Valley of Elah, E-L-A-H? I was going through that story, and since none of you seem to be familiar, then I'll be telling you a new doctrine. But then you'll be surprised because you all know that story very well, and all the kids enjoy it. It was one of the first stories that I ever heard, and I still remember it till today. When I read that passage and I was going through that, I said, now, what am I interested in today? And I just opened the Bible, and I went to the book of Samuel. And I was looking at it, and I went to chapter 17. I will request that you open your Bible to chapter 17 of 1 Samuel, because we will be reading from that book in that chapter. Now, talking about the Valley of Elah, I decided to pick that topic because it's different. It's not a common word. It's not something we are familiar with. The valley is where David and Goliath had that battle. I was going to do a presentation, but I did not know if that would be reliable or if I can get that to set up, so I decided to skip that. Then I researched to see if there are other trends with regard to that valley, and I found out that there was a movies made with respect to the Valley of Elah. I never knew of that until I decided to look at it this week. One of the outstanding movies was about, this man that lost his son, a soldier who recently returned from Iraq, but has mysteriously disappeared. I didn't know they had a movie that way, but they had a movie, and the title of that movie is The Valley of Elah. Then I got curious. I said, now, what and why would they pick such a title for that movie? Which was interesting. And looking at that particular book that we will be reading, 1 Samuel 17, if you go to verse 19, it will tell you that was the valley that the Israelites and the Philistines had a battle. And the setting here was that the Philistines would come on the east end or this west end, and the Israelites on the other. And they both watched the battle. As I was reading that, I actually begin to realize, thinking of that first movie there, the implication of finding out that your life hangs in the balance. And then I was thinking of a song that will actually motivate me to make me say, okay, what is God's presence that I need to see? And I looked at that song. It said, have you seen Jesus? And I looked at David. Who is the character here? In this story, we have two characters. We have two groups. We have the Philistines and we have the Israelites. Now, the Philistines had a captain, or they call it in this passage the champion. And the champion supposedly for Israelites would have been Saul or King Saul. We'll look at a few passages here to see how that transpired. The valley is set up, and I wish I could make a picture where you can see it, but it's very easy to Google, and you find that they have quite a few things on that valley. It looks an interesting piece of land, and it's supposed to be triangular, flat, and then it's got mountains on both sides, so that both campers can see themselves, and at the end as we go, you find out that the Philistines were chased out along the path through that valley. So let's start reading and see exactly what we'll be getting from this story. And then we'll try to see how we can apply it. Because the importance of actually having any Bible discussion is to be able to extract valuable information that we can use or that will be of benefit to us. We try to do that. The good thing is that most of you are familiar with this story, and you probably have heard some good points on what to take from it or what to extract from it that would be of benefit to you. I had quite a lot of things here that was of benefit to me, and it's what you call awakening. Made me to say, now, am I feeling the Lord like David did? I had this concept divided into portions. The first part here is going to be talking about the Israelites and the Philistines set for battle. Remember, the Christians have what we know as a warfare. We are always at battle with who? With the devil. And the Bible said the devil is never asleep because he is what? Walking day and night to see who he might take control of, and let that person do his dirty deeds. So we are always at battle, not a physical battle, but a spiritual battle. Then one other thing I need us to take note of in this story as we go is the way God has been able to effect his plans. It's so intricate that when you look at it, you will miss it unless you have a spiritual mind frame. Looking at this from a physical point, you will miss it completely. When I looked at the camp, I looked at what the Israelites had to face, and I looked at the Philistines. They were all about the same height, give or take, and they were all set for battle. Because the goal was for the Philistines to go into Bethlehem and take over. They were marching to the capital city. So the Israelites have no other option but to stop them. And as they were coming, what happened? They both camped on both sides. The Philistines had a giant there. And I was wondering why they would all wait for one person to come and display their might and tell them, and they all tend to have agreed, because the challenge was thrown by Goliath. And he said, now we will do this. Any of you who can face me, if you can defeat me, we will serve you. If we defeat you, you will serve us. You will be our servants. And from the story, let's read a few passages here. That way we will not... We'll be able to tie on to a few points there that I think is good to look at. I want you to go to verse 8 to 10 of chapter 17, if you will read that with me. Verse 8 said, then he stood and cried out to the armies of Israel and said to them, why have you come out to line up for the battle? Am I not a Philistine, and you the servants of Saul? Choose a man for yourself and let him come down to me. If he is able to fight with me and kill me, then we will be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then you shall be our servants and servers. And the Philistines said, I defy the armies of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together. Now, remember when Samuel was upset because the Israelites demanded for a king. What were they told? God said, Samuel, don't be mad because they are not angry at you. They are what? Angry. They are not, actually, they are not rejecting you, Samuel. They are rejecting me. Here, what are the Philistines doing? They say, we're going to defy your armies. Who, in essence, are they defying? They defying God. Because God is always being the one that led the Israelites through all the battles. Now, if you look at that, it's indirect, but they defying, he was actually defying God. And you can see exactly how what that happened how, and how that impacted David. After look at what they, from those readings, this is what I got from there. One, he threw out an intimidation, which is the worst strategy. You have to get your opponents intimidated. Look at the basketball currently going. What are you seeing? It is a tactical intimidation of the opponents. You want to disable the heat was turned on there in San Antonio. And what happened? There was an excuse that this was that and that was that. Those are the strategies for intimidation. And that displaces the focus of your opponent. What do Christians have in that regard? We get distracted by little petty things. A brother may have a little very simple things that might go wrong, and we will do what? Escalate it, make a mountain out of a hill. And that is the story here. They intimidation. Number two, he was boastful. He came as if he was very confident of what he was going to do. But look at him, he was, because look at his height. We will talk about his armory here shortly. Then he trusted in himself. And that is one of the things Christians have to do. Trust not in ourselves, as we will see, but let's see what David did in that case. Here, he trusted in himself. Number four, he trusted in his armories because he had what? Look at the miles of cover he had in case. He even had somebody to hold a shield for him. So you have to get through all that to get to him. And I can imagine me going there and he is all armored up and I'm going to fight him. And the funny thing is, these days, I was thinking of the Iraq war when Saddam was nicely comfortable in his bunker, expecting nothing to happen. And the U.S. sent that rocket right through the dirt and came and got him right out from where he was hiding. See, that is a different story from here. Here, you have to be a first combat. It's not where your target is somewhere and you shoot to kill. We have guns. Here, you have a sword, and you have to face them with the sword. And one other thing I recalled was when the Babylonians were attacking the Israelites, when they were under captivity and Assyrians came, there was a funny story that went on. The Assyrians, I believe, had horses, and the Babylonians, no, the Babylonians had horses, the Assyrians have what they call camels. And I did not take note of that, that horses don't like camels. The smell of camels displaces them, and they scatter and they run. I saw that in the Western spirit when I was doing the book of Isaiah. That was an interesting point, because that is what happens. Here, strategy is what he is doing here, and he uses that. He was prideful too, because he said, what are you on? You are all servants of Saul. I am a Philistine. I'm not a servant. I am he. You pick somebody, you servants, to come here. And if knowing fully well, with his gigantic self, you won't stand a chance. Let him come here and I'll fix him. Then you can go from there. And then he defiled the name of the Lord. Those are the things we look at. And how do we do with this? We have to apply it to ourselves. Because these are things we don't want to be caught in. Prideful, boastful, trusting in ourselves. There's a difference between putting your effort to do something, knowing that God is with you, than doing something and saying, I have done it. That is the case here. Now let's look at David. No, we won't go to David. We'll look at the camp of the Israelites first. You can look at that if you turn to 11 and through 24. Verse 11 said, "And when Saul and all Israel heard these words of the Philistines, they were dismayed and greatly afraid." Did the intimidation work? Of course it did. Who came out to face Goliath? Not a single person. So now David, the son of Jesse, was the one that came. And let's look at other things about the Israelites. One that I concluded from reading other passages there, if you go and read verse 24, it says that their lack is their lack of faith, the lack of trust, misplaced alliance. And now, if you go back to Israelites, history is always bound to repeat itself if you don't remember history. When they had a problem with the Assyrians and the Babylonians, instead of having their alliance with God, they decided to make alliance with Egypt and also Assyria. And God said, "Assyria, that you make an alliance with, will teach you a lesson." And that is precisely what happened. That would be in the book of Isaiah. And they did learn a lesson from that. Rather, they didn't, because it took them about 640 years to be able to understand and learn what Isaiah told them was going to happen. And here we've seen them all scared. They have misplaced alliance. They were disarrayed. That is what Christians will be if we have a misplaced alliance, do not trust in God, trust in our own self-confidence. Now let's look at those. I then decided to look at the credentials of Goliath. If you look at 4 through 7, let's see his armories, because if you were armed as he was, you will find out that you will have that much confidence if you trust that your armory will be sufficient to keep you from being destroyed. Let me read 4 through 7 briefly here. It said, "And a champion went out from the camp of the Philistines named Goliath from Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. He had a bronze helmet on his head, and he was armed with a coat of mail, and the weight of that coat was 5,000 shekels of bronze. And he had bronze armor and on his legs and a bronze javelin between his shoulders. Now the staff of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and his iron spearhead weighed 600 shekels, and a sheep bearer went before him." Now there you go. Trent is like a lightweight boxer going against a heavyweight boxer. And if you look at that height, it's not that much. But you can almost see the disaster when a heavyweight is fighting against a bantamweight or a lightweight. That's why the weight control is very, very important in that sport. And now go to football. What do we use as backs? It's not the life of the quarterback, maybe lighter. But we normally use that Perry, I think was one of them, they call him the fridge. They normally call him the wall. If you run into him, you're bouncing back. The weight became important. And here, what do we have? A fridge standing there and telling you, "Come and hit me and see what happens." Nobody could take that chance. And they were wise, except they missed place alliance. Okay, now that was what he had. Let's look at what David had. And David was the last born. And recall, when David went down to, how did he get to go to the camp? The daddy told him, "Go take this to your brothers and also give this to the king." So he went there. What happened when he got there? He saw this huge man talking and boasting. And it's like most of us will do. He got nosy. I said, "Now what was that?" And somebody said, "Not only that, the king is going to do this." And the brothers told him what? They said, "Hey, you little nosy fellow, were you not supposed to be taking care of those few cattle that we do have? What are you doing here?" And he said, "What did these people say now? What is that man saying?" In other words, they didn't want him to be there. So he talked to others, and they told him what was going on. And he said, "Now, this man is defying God." And he told the brother, "Is that not a reason for somebody to face him?" Now, let's see what his credentials were here. Let's go to Samuel 17, let's look 34 to 37. And remember, when he went to King Saul, what did King Saul tell him? He said, "You are just a lad. You cannot face this man. He has been at war, a man of war, right from when he was a youth. Now look at him. You can't. You make farmer's boy. You can't do that." And he said he needed to convince the king that he is capable of doing that. Let's look at 34. But David said to Saul, no, let me look at 33. And Saul said to David, "You are not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for you are a youth, and a man of war from his, and he is a man of war from his youth." He has been doing this growing up. He didn't just start today. So you cannot go there. And David said, "Your servant used to keep his father's sheep, and when a lion or a bear came and took a lamb out of the flock, I went out after it, and I struck it, and I delivered the lamb from its mouth, and when it arose against me, I caught it by its beard and struck and killed it. Your servant has killed both lion and bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, seeing he has defied the armies of the living God." He made a very cogent point right there. Said, just like I did, and I kept wondering if I can stand and fight a lion. He was able to do that. And he's going to tell you why he was able to do that. He said, "This man that is here defying our God is going to be victim just like the lion and the bear that he has killed." And he meant it because he had his total trust in God. Now, let's go back and see the battle now. Now the battle is set. And Saul did what? Now Saul understood where he was coming from and said, okay, nobody was ready to go. So David had to go. And David was ready. And what did Saul do? Gave him his armory so he can put that on. And I can imagine giving the armory, it's like me, giving my armory to Matthew there to put on and go to battle. He barely could move because the weight itself was even too much for me, let alone him dragging himself to go face Goliath. So he told the king, said, "This is not for me. I can barely move in this stuff. Besides, looking at it, he didn't use that when he killed the lion. He had nothing. But he did kill the lion and the bear, and he rescued his sheep that were captured." Let's look at what we have facing now. I had a brief summary of something that comes to us as Christians that make us intimidated and we don't pursue before we go to talk about David. We don't like to be criticized. That's one thing that I know. We don't like to be criticized. I know I don't. Normally, I try to defend that. No, I didn't do that, or this is that. But I'm getting wiser. I don't refute criticism. Instead, I listen, and I go back, and I look at it, and see if that was correct. If it is, then I'll come and talk to you about that. Because I found out more often that I have been able to correct myself and realign myself properly. And that has been beneficial to me. Number two, we don't want to challenge. If somebody blasphemes, we just walk by. Because it's better not to go waste time doing that. Here, David didn't let that slip by. He considered a challenge of God to be his own personal business. And he took that on. Number three, I think we are scared that we might be wrong. It's like me presenting this lesson today. One of the things that I recognized today was this. It's a whole lot better because if I am in error here, I will be corrected. Guess the part that is difficult. When I talk to a non-Christian and I am in error, that to me is more detrimental. Because he will go with the wrong impression and the error that I fed him. While here, I will be corrected. And every other person will learn from it. That is where not being scared to be wrong, but when you are doing what you ought to do and you're doing it sincerely, the Bible says study to show. I don't talk unless I happen to have what, if I don't know something, I try not to talk. Because the Bible said, you do not know a fool until he opens his mouth. So I try not to be in that ballpark. I make sure at least I understand what I'm going to talk about, then I'll talk about it. If I do not know, I wouldn't bother talking, but I will look at it so I'll know what it is and how to address it next time. So that's one of the problems I think we have. We see what David did. Everyone is entitled to their opinions. That's what we have running around right now. Everyone is entitled to their opinion. So I went to a place here where Matthew was playing basketball before the school ended. They said, everyone is welcome to worship. We worship on Sunday morning from, I think, 10 to 11:30 is their worship. Everyone is welcomed from every religion. You can assemble there. We won't criticize you. When you finish assembling in fellowship, then you can all disperse. Then we will have our worship from 11:30 to 12:30. Because we are not here to convince you or to make you leave your group. That was the message. We are not here to make you leave your group. We just want you to fellowship with us because we're having fun doing that. And that is where I have that point. Everyone is entitled to the opinion and let them keep it. We won't make them sweat it out. And we have the sexual complications now where we have marriages and intertwined and all of that sort of thing, and especially the funny one of having gays go into the bathrooms of each other because they happen to profess to be the other sex and all of that nonsense. Everything that you do that is not as contrary to God's will always have a serious repercussion. And that is the scenario we are in now. Now, let's go back. We did talk about the Philistines and the battle. We talked about his physical size. We did talk about his armory. Now, let's go back and see the man David. The man David interested me very much because if you look at the lineage, what does it say? Out of the house of David will Christ come. And how important is Christ to us? The word Christian means without Christ, I am nothing. So if Christ is not there, we will be useless. And here, David was given a special recognition by God. We will get to that. First of all, let's see what David did. I want us to go to that book of Samuel, chapter 17, and I want us to read verse 45 through 47. Let me start from 44. And the Philistines said to David, come to me. Let's go back to where when the Philistines saw him, saw the little lad coming. What did he say? He said, draw to me. So the Philistines came and began drawing near to David. And the man who bore the shield went before him. And when the Philistines looked about and saw David, he disdained him, for he was only a youth, ruddy and good looking. So the Philistine said to David, am I a dog that you come to me with a stick, with sticks? But that's true. You don't go to battle. I recall some of the Westerns that I've seen, and when you see the native Indians at war, what do they have? They have those spears that they run around with. And when the military comes with the guns, what chances do they normally have? Zero. And look at here now. Here is David. Look at the armory he had before. And here David comes with what? A sling. And you are the monster standing there, and he comes to you and he said, I'm the one that's about to beat you up here. Because what did you say? If I kill you, you become my servant here. Here's my string. And of course, what do I do? I'll pick up me a few pebbles here. But let's see. Let's read down. 42. And when the Philistines looked about and saw David, they disdained him, for he was only a youth, ruddy and good looking. So the Philistines said to David, "Am I a dog that you come to me with sticks?" And the Philistines cursed David by his God. And the Philistines said to David, "Come to me, and I will give your flesh to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field." Then David said to the Philistines, "You come to me with a sword, with a spear, and with a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied." Can you see any stronger, more potent weapon than that? I can't. I look at the simplicity of that weapon, but the magnitude and the impact is so overwhelming. It's enough to be scared. And I was thinking of that song, "Have you seen Jesus, my Lord?" He said, "He's next to you in everything you see." Here, David is saying, "I am coming to you." Verse 46, "This day the Lord will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you and take your head from you. And this day I will give the carcass of the camp of the Philistines to the birds of the air and the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel." Can you see anything better? I can't. I was reading the story. The more I read it, like I always seem to always know, that the more you read the Bible, the more you're enlightened, the more you gain strength from it, the more it impresses you, and the more you get stronger. There's another song there that I think is 41. It said that, "I am weak, Lord, but I need," it said, "restore my soul," because it needs restoring. "I need it restored from your word, because it will make me strong." This is exactly what you see in here. And David has this, that is what he told the Philistines. And verse 47, "Then all of the assembly shall know that the Lord does not serve with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands." The battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands. So it was when the Philistines arose and came and drew near to meet David, that David hurried and ran toward the army to meet the Philistines. Then David put his hand in his bag and took out a stone, and he slung it and struck the Philistine in his forehead, so that the stone sank into his forehead and he fell on his face to the earth. Now, if you were talking of miracles, will you be searching for any more? I'm looking at an armored man. What are the chances that I will pull a string and sling it, and it's going to go right into the forehead of anybody sitting within this audience? And if we have a, and you are all armed like he was, and not at my height, here you are, and the chances of success is zero to none. Here, look at the impact David had, and he fell on his face. The irony, the funny part was that he did not even have a sword to cut the head off. He had to go borrow this sword from Goliath himself to chop off his head just like he wanted and take it. It is an interesting story. It's a story I love. I've always read it. Now let's look at David, the man that God said when he appointed him. He told Saul, he said, "I have a replacement for you." And we will recall it was because of what Saul did. And he was to be replaced by Saul. And so God replaced him with David. And he used a phrase there that said he was what? A man after God's own heart. When I heard that, when I read that, it became something of curiosity. What were his qualities that he was a man after God's own heart? The first that I was able to arrive at was that he had absolute faith in God. Will you doubt that? If you do, you take a sling The next war the U.S. has, and you go to the battlefront with your sword and sling and see exactly how successful you will be. He had absolute faith in God, no doubt whatsoever. You find that in Samuel 17:37. He also absolutely loved the laws of God. He emphasized that if you go to Psalm 19:47, let me see what he said. I had a brief quote from him. He repeatedly mentioned how much he loved God. He said, "For I delight in your commands because I love them. I lift up my hands to your commands, which I love, and I meditate on your decrees." It is not hard to see. Look at all that he talks about God. He focuses on the laws of God. He upholds it. No doubt God said he's a man after his own heart. My number three is that he was truthfully thankful. You know, that is something that is interesting. Being thankful. I find out that there are a lot of things that we miss or that I miss that I am not thankful for because I take them for granted. Here, he is very thankful. He said, "I wash my hands in innocence and go about your altar, O Lord, proclaiming aloud your praise and telling of all your wonderful deeds." His life was marked with thankfulness. Christians have to be thankful because we have been so blessed, not physically necessarily, but because we have been privileged to be the children of God. It's a rare opportunity because there are those that are groping in darkness and they think that that is the truth. We are blessed and we need to be thankful. Number four. He was truly repented. He normally, a song that I heard and it tickled me. It said, perfect imperfection. And I attribute that to Christianity because I'm looking at Christians sitting down with perfect imperfection. Imperfect, but made perfect through Christ. The fellow that sang that song doesn't know that. He's just sang a song. But when you take that song and you look at a Christian, that is what I see. That is what David saw. David did not see him strong. He did not see him as a perfect man because right here, he repented. And if you recall, why did he do this repentance? It was because he took Uriah's wife. What did he do? He sent him to the battle, committed adultery, and Samuel said, there was a man that has a cattle. And this other rich man went and took that poor man's cattle to feed it to his friends. He said, "That man must surely be put to death." And someone said, "Oh, buddy, that's you." And what did he do? He rent his clothes, put on ash in his head, and truly and sincerely repented. So much that even the wife despised him for doing that. And he said, "That's your business. I am serving my God." That is the mind, at least up to where I've been able to gather points that I think is what God said. David is a man after my own heart. Now, after this, let's conclude because I was trying to look at that particular passage and guess who wrapped it up for me? It was Paul. In the book of Acts chapter 13, if you want to turn to that, from verse 20 through 24, Paul, talking about David, was addressing the Jews at this point, or the Gentiles who might be present too. And this is what he said. "Then Paul stood up and monitoring with his hand said, 'Men of Israel and you who fear God, listen. The God of these people, Israel, chose our fathers and exalted the people when they dwell as strangers in the land of Egypt. And with an uplifted arm, he brought them out of it. Now, for a time of about 40 years, he put up with their ways in the wilderness." I just conclude, he put up with their foolish ways in the wilderness. because we saw what went on in the wilderness. It was a Rockefeller routing scenario where you sit down now and try to justify yourself. But I keep wondering, if I was in there, I'd probably be worse off than they were. And when he had destroyed seven nations in the land of Canaan, he distributed the land to them by allotment. After that, he gave them judges for about 450 years until Samuel the prophet. And afterward, they asked for a king. So God gave them Saul. Remember, we talked about that. He said, they have not rejected you, Samuel. They have rejected me. And gave Saul, the son of Kish, a man of the tribe of Benjamin, for 40 years. Now, in verse 22, which is the key passage here, he said, and when he had removed him, he raised up from them David as king, to whom also he gave testimony and said, I have found the son of Jesse, a man after my own heart, who will do all my will. Let's look at the scenario. So from this man's seed, according to the promise, God raised up for Israel a Savior, Jesus, after John had first preached before his coming. And then we have the baptism for repentance. That is my summary, my conclusion. Because I believe that in looking at the life of David, and looking at the blessings that we have been privileged to have, and what God has done for us, we deserve to be grateful. Not that we deserve God's mercy, but to be grateful that God so blessed us and made us to be heir of his kingdom, so that we are grateful to be called his children. If you're in our audience today and you have a need for the church to pray for you, or you want to be a member of the church, or you have a problem that you think we might be able to help you, this is our time to do that. You can call the next person by you, or any other members here will be happy to assist you. And if you're a member and you have other problems, we have the elders and the deacons in this congregation and all other men capable of helping you with your problem. If we do not have that problem, we'll study with you and try to make sure we help you with that situation. And it will also be something we will benefit from. So at this point, let's all get up and let's sing. Thank you.